guest growl, Ramona. Ah! Excellent. Hey, 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 it's Mason in Ireland 2 days before Turkey Day. And I told you people, the Rams are a legitimate Super Bowl contender. Ramona, I've been beating this drum for about 3 weeks, and I get killed on social media. The thing is, they haven't played any good teams. They don't beat anybody. How about going into Tampa and beating the Bucs in Tampa? And if you're going to come back at me with, hey, Tampa's not a good team, Ramona, who is? Who's like the only team in the ESPN projections that's favored to go to the Super Bowl at a higher clip than the Rams is the Saints. The Packers
just lost Drew Brees.
Right, and the Packers are somehow right with the Rams, but the Packers stink. The Packers just lost to the Colts on Sunday. I love this Rams team. I don't think it has a lot of weaknesses. I know kicker is a question mark, but Ramona, what we saw last night was them again going on the road, piling up almost 500 yards of total offense and throwing the ball 50 times. They couldn't get their running game going, and it didn't matter because they were able to beat Tampa Bay. Are you with me that the Rams are a legitimate Super Bowl contender after 10 weeks?
I think so because of what I see from the rest of the NFC, right? I thought that was a big win going into Tampa, Monday Night Football. They like actually have fans there. There seem to be like a lot of people in the stands, right?
Sure.
It's really hard
when we're closing restaurants in LA County on Wednesday and they have 10,000 fans in the stands watching the Rams in Tampa.
I mean,
all depends where you live, Momo.
I know. You know, well, it's interesting because like I was watching that. I was like, boy, that actually sounds and feels like a real football game. This is like Monday Night Football. You know, that was a big stage. And like, you know, Jared Goff, I thought it was, I mean, the way that they defended the Rams was almost like insulting to Jared Goff. It was sort of like, we are just going to force you to beat us. It's like leaving Rajon Rondo wide open from three the entire game because you just don't believe that he can beat you. And then he just does. And I think that's what was so, what I took from that. I mean, Jared Goff threw the ball 51 times.
Yeah, and it's not the first time this year he's thrown 50 passes. By the way, the thing about the Rams, and one of the reasons why I'm so high on him, is if you look at the box score from that game, the Rams are really, really hard to defend because they spread the ball around really like no other team in the NFL.
Yep.
Robert Woods caught 12 passes, and Cooper Kupp caught 11. So how do you defend? Gerald Everett, one of the tight ends, caught 4. Tyler Higbee caught 4. And then the guys who caught the touchdowns, they threw one touchdown to Van Jefferson. They threw another touchdown to Cam Akers. It doesn't do you any good to double anybody because Goff is very good at throwing the ball to whoever is open. So 23 receptions between your two starting wide receivers. You know, for example, Mike Evans last night had 5 catches. Antonio Brown had 8. That's 13. Cooper Kupp had 11. Robert Woods had 12. That's 23. The Rams starting wide receivers had 10 more catches than the Bucs. And the Bucs are supposed to be this team with these unbelievable wide receivers, Antonio Brown and Mike Evans, that are going to kill you. But the Rams were better. They were a better team. They outgained them. They outpassed them. Rushing was weird in that neither team really rushed the ball. The Rams, I think, rushed for 37 yards, and Tampa Bay rushed for 42. So it came down to a passing game and turnovers, and the Rams, Jordan Fuller had 2 interceptions of Tom, and he's a rookie, of Tom Brady, who doesn't throw a lot of INTs. So this was a great win for the Rams across the board.
I thought, as good as Jared Goff was, as good as the receivers were, I thought they won the way that they've been winning with that defense. I mean, this is a Tampa Bay team that has tons of options and tons of weapons. And they just, you know, I thought they did a really good job all night of frustrating that Tampa Bay offense. I mean, it was, you know, Tom Brady's, you know, I thought those 2 interceptions that he threw, like, those were really bad. Like, when you make Tom Brady look bad.
Right.
That's saying something.
Yeah, and I think the Rams, again, the only question mark they have on that whole team is the kicker. Everybody, they have the best defensive lineman in the league. They have the best corner in the league. Their young defensive backs fly all over the field. Their offensive line, even though they lost Andrew Whitworth, is really solid. They gave Jared Goff all the time he needed to throw. The running backs, they have 3 running backs who are all good. They have three wide receivers who are all good. They have two tight ends who are all good. The Rams are the deepest team in the NFC. And if you're going to come at me with Seattle, the Rams already beat Seattle.
Yep.
You know, so I think they're going to be great. We'll be talking to Lindsay Theory later in this hour. Lindsay covers the Rams for ESPN. And we'll get deeper into this. Coming up here in a couple of minutes, Ramona, Wes Matthews is going to join us. I think of the Lakers' big offseason haul, Wes Matthews is probably the one guy we're not talking enough about. This is a two-way player who can shoot threes and I think is going to be a huge asset for Frank Vogel to plug into either a guard or a forward spot. And if you look at this Laker bench now, depending on who starts and who comes off the bench, this is, Ramona, and I've been involved with the Lakers for more than 20 years, this is the deepest bench I think I've ever seen them
have. Wow. Yeah, I mean, I guess you have two guys who finished in the top three of six-man of the year the last 2 years.
And the two leading bench scorers in the NBA last season. Right.
Yeah, Dennis Schroeder and Montrezl Harrell. I mean, and I was thinking about this the other day. I was talking with Brian Windhorst on the Hoop Collective, and we were talking about Montrez leaving the Clippers. And, you know, one of the things I thought kind of did the Clippers in and did Doc Rivers in is that Montrez and Lou Williams pick and roll has always been one of the most deadly plays in basketball. Like they can do, you know, it's coming. You can't stop.
And
if
Schroeder and Montrez can recreate that, the Lakers have a huge weapon.
I think that can be brilliant.
All right, so let's do this. Wes Matthews is going to join us coming up next. We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll visit with one of the newest Lakers. Ramona's in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Mason in Ireland, Ramona Shelburne sitting in for Mace. And in a matter of moments, Wesley Matthews is going to join us, one of the newest Lakers. Ramona, yesterday we had Montrezl Harrell on the show.
Oh, awesome.
Why do you think the Clippers didn't make a more serious attempt to re-sign Montrezl Harrell? I think that's a big mistake they made.
The rest of the season will really be a referendum on that, right? I know kind of how those guys thought about the end of last year, and I think they felt like they had a choice to make between Marcus Morris and Montrezl, which is they would have liked to keep both, yeah, but if you had to choose, it would be Marcus. And I think the reason, I think they felt that the way they want to play this year, I think they wanted more outside shooting, which is why they pursued Serge Ibaka, you know, and that's not Montrez's game. He's an energy guy, pick and roll guy, et cetera. I think they felt like they wanted to be able to have more lineups that were like stretch four, stretch fives, as opposed to Montrez. Plus, quite frankly, Montrez clashed with Kawhi and Paul Leonard last year. And
or Paul George.
Paul George, yeah, of course. They inverted their names. There was a couple of incidents where, you know, Montrez, you know, spoke out in the media. There was a couple instances where they spoke, you know, very, very loudly on the court for all to hear. And I don't think this was like the reason they didn't want him back. But when they were forced to make a choice, it was like, well, I think it would be good to play more this way. Right. I think they really wanted Serge Ibaka to be, to replace Montrez because of his skill set.
The one thing I've heard from Laker fans is they'll say, well, Montrez doesn't shoot threes. He might not, but Wesley Matthews does.
Yep.
Ramona, he is a career 38% three-point shooter. He shot 41% one of the years he was in Portland, and he's a high-volume three-point shooter. He's the only guy in Dallas history other, I think, than Dirk, to make six, or there may have been a couple more, but I mean, he made 600 threes while he played in Dallas. And he's the only undrafted player. He may have changed. I know when he did it, he was the first one. He was the first undrafted player ever to make 1,500 three-pointers. So he's, you can put him in the modern game and stick him at the three-point line and let LeBron and AD create. And if you don't guard him, he's going to bomb from the outside. And he's coming off of a year in Milwaukee where he played on that Bucks team that had the best record in the NBA.
Yep.
So I think that's a very solid addition. I think Dennis Schroeder is a really solid addition. And I love the Marc Gasol signing, Momo, just because Marc Gasol is a good defensive player, but he's an excellent passer. And he can pass out of the high post. He can shoot threes from up there. So if you don't go out there and get him, you know, when JaVale and Dwight were in the game, they took up space down low by the rim. And so Anthony Davis would go outside and shoot threes. But now Anthony Davis can do whatever he wants. If he wants to go down on the block, you move Marc Gasol out to the outside. If AD wants to go outside, you put Marc Gasol down on the block. I think this, again, the depth of this Lakers team is staggering to me. I think he could go 10 deep in games, and that's normally not the Lakers' MO. The Lakers are normally a 7-8 deep team. But now if you look at this entire second unit, I assume KCP is going to start. But if you look at this entire second unit, all those guys are going to get minutes. And I actually think Talen Horton-Tucker is going to get some rotation minutes. They're really high on him.
I think he's going to get some rotation minutes. And I think the reason why depth is so important this year is just because of this condensed schedule, like of this fast, you know, we just got done playing. A lot of these guys are going to, I don't want to use the load management term, okay, but I think they should ramp up that as we say when they get back. Like, there's no reason for LeBron to be playing 40 minutes out of the gate. I think they're going to need to make sure that they have some depth so that, you know, everybody who played heavy minutes deep into October has a little time to kind of heal their body and not have to go that hard that early.
Right. And, you know, Matthews could be in the starting lineup. He started in Milwaukee last year.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, he started all 10 playoff games for he started every playoff game his team has ever played. He started all the playoff games in Utah, all the playoff games in Portland, in Dallas, in Indiana, in Milwaukee. So you're bringing in a veteran guy who's used to starting, who when your big scorers get the ball inside near the rim are going to be able to kick it out to him, and he's going to be able to bomb threes. And that's one thing that Danny Green kind of did last year. And so you're replacing Danny Green with Dennis Schroeder and Wes Matthews, both who can shoot threes from the outside.
Well, you're replacing Danny Green, who had that 3-and-D skill set at $15 million a year, with Wes Matthews, who is playing on a $3.7 million contract.
Right.
Like, they got almost a $12 million discount there. That's really important in terms of how you're reframing your lineup, right? The Laker bench, like, sometimes you just look at like how much guys make in the starting lineup versus the bench. Last year, who on the bench made money? Like, most of those guys were playing on vet minimum or pieces of the mid-level.
Or Kuzma at the end of his first deal.
At the end of his first deal. And I think I don't think they will give Kuzma an extension right now. They could certainly talk, maybe something will make sense, but I think they probably want to preserve as much flexibility as they can for the future going forward, because there's so many great free agents coming up in this class.
With their ability to sign Ibaka late,
he's
a really good player. Are the Clippers still the second best team in the West in your mind?
I don't know. I got to be honest. Like, I know people think Denver took a step back, right? I don't think they did. I think they stay the same or they get better. I like that they got Millsap, right? I kind of like what Portland did, John. I mean, what Portland did to me is really deep now. I don't know how they're going to defend anybody, but I just think they're going to score a bazillion points every night. So I think they go into the top four of the West. But to me, the story in the Western Conference is you have two of your better teams last year are going in a completely different direction with the Rockets and the Oklahoma City Thunder, right? Like, in last year, it felt like those two teams were, what were they, 4-5? I think both of them have taken a pretty big step back in the offseason. Houston, maybe not quite as much. Maybe they're still a playoff team. But, they seem like they're kind of tearing it down in some sense.
Well, I mean, Westbrook and Harden, if you talk to their people, I mean, I know the Rockets are saying we're not going to trade him. If you talk to the people that represent Westbrook and Harden, they'll tell you that story's not over yet, that those two guys still want out.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is, if I'm Houston, I'm lining it up because you want to have a Harden trade lined up, but you don't want to trade him until you have to, right? Because he has so much time in the field. But you definitely don't want to trade him before you trade Westbrook, okay? Because some of the assets you'll get back in a Harden trade might be the ones that you need in a Westbrook trade, because I think that's going to be a much harder trade to pull off.
Right, but the West is going to look different. I think that you wonder, like, is New Orleans a playoff team? Is Phoenix?
You know, I think Phoenix is. I think New Orleans is
Golden State now that they've lost Clay?
Golden State to me is the big mystery, because, like, I saw them last year and I was like, well, they still have Steph and Draymond. I mean, that, you know, those are two pillars of that team. And then I went up there and I watched them and I go, who are these other guys? Like, I don't know anybody else in this locker room from, like, they lost so much depth and they lost so much of the veterans who just played their style. And, like, I think they've got some of that depth back. I think they're going to be better, but I think they're fringe playoff team. I think they're, you know, 7-8 seed.
Right. What I've said about them is I think they can make the playoffs without Clay. I don't think they can compete for the title.
No. And I think the question for them is really going to be, they're paying so much in luxury taxes for this year. And if it looks like, if it's just not happening, if they have any injuries or if it's not happening and it's not going well, I think they have to just go in a different direction.
Yeah.
They got to get off some of that money.
Wow. Can you imagine? That'll be interesting. And you know, in their case, they own their own building.
Right.
So it would be, well, part of their concerns is with COVID is it's just a huge money drain. Because they're not bringing any money.
I mean, Joe Lacob essentially said to me, if they don't have fans this season, that they're going to lose $400 million in revenue.
Jeez.
That's $400 million in revenue. Because when they built Chase Center, I mean, that thing is like an ATM. You have the underground suites and the above ground suites. I mean, everything. Just the way that they monetize Chase Center is second to none in the NBA. Not even Madison Square Garden has monetized its build, you know, the Knicks have monetized like the way the Warriors have. So with no fans, it's really costly for them. I have optimism. I came on the show a couple weeks ago and talked about their plan to bring back fans. I don't think public health officials are going to do anything like that right now.
It's still a no. Yeah.
It's going to be a no for a little while because you can't send mixed messages, right? Like the public health officials are trying to get everyone to stay home and be safe for Thanksgiving. Like a lot of why everything's closing right now is in anticipation of the virus spreading a lot due to Thanksgiving, right? In our current levels. But I think that like once we get through this, whatever this third wave is, and let's be careful not to undersell how dangerous this third wave is. But I think when we turn the corner on January, February, and we get more therapeutics, maybe the vaccine is closer, maybe the rates are falling because people have stayed home or whatever it is. That's when I think that the Warriors and the other teams, the NBA, can start bringing fans back.
Yeah, we'll see. You're right. It is going to make a huge difference. Okay, we'll take a break. Ramona in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Mason in Ireland. Ramona Shelburne's in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, and we welcome to the program one of the newest Lakers, Wes Matthews, who's had a great NBA career in places like Utah, Portland, Dallas, Indiana, Milwaukee, and now he's a Laker. Wes, congratulations, man. It's great to have you here. How you feeling?
Thank you. I'm feeling good. I'm excited.
I would think now, we were looking up, Wes, the timing of all this, and you've talked openly about the fact that your mom, Pam, was an excellent athlete. She kind of raised you. She was a runner and a basketball player. And your dad, who you didn't have a relationship with much when you were young, but do now, was a Laker when you were a little kid. Now, do you have any recollection do you recall that? I mean, is that something, or were you too young to know that your dad once played for the Lakers when you were little?
I was too young, but obviously I know all about it from stories. You know, my mom used to tell me, she used to dress me up, and I would run around the forum like I owned the place. And I've got pictures of Kareem and Magic and Pat Riley, you know, holding me when I was a kid, when I was a baby, Easter egg hunts and all that kind of stuff at, I believe, Pat Riley's house. I might be wrong, I'm not sure. But, yeah, it was kind of full circle, you know. And now my dad winning two championships with the Lakers, roughly around the same age. I was a little bit younger than my daughter is now. It's kind of – it's pretty weird.
Hey, Wes, what sold you on the Lakers? I'm sure you had a lot of interest from other teams with your skill set. What made you choose purple and gold?
What made me choose purple and gold was, you know, their desire for me. And I think in any field, in any profession, you know, you want to be somewhere. One, you want to win. Two, you want to be the best. You want to be somewhere that's going to bring the best out of you. And three, you want to be somewhere where you're wanted for what you do. And you're appreciated for what you do. And not to say that other teams don't or didn't, but, you know, when it came down to the nitty gritty of it and go time, the Lakers were the ones that showed up the most.
We're talking to Wes Matthews, one of the newest Lakers. He was announced to the media today, and he'll be in uniform in the purple and gold. As he mentioned, his dad played with Michael Thompson and James Worthy and a lot of our friends from the Showtime Lakers. Wes, last year, you played in Milwaukee on the team that had the best record in the NBA during the regular season. What do you think you got out of that experience? What was it like playing in Milwaukee on the team that, for the regular season at least, had the best record in the league?
You know, my time with Milwaukee, it was brief, but it was also very heartfelt, you know, similar to the Lakers, because, you know, this is home for me. I'm from Wisconsin. I'm currently in Wisconsin. I built my house in Madison. I went to school at Marquette. My family's from Milwaukee. You know, so it was almost like also like a full circle type thing as well. And it was obviously winning as many games as we did and the success that we had during the regular season was awesome. It was a great accomplishment. Obviously, it wasn't the end goal, and we fell short of that. But my time there was amazing, and I'm grateful and I'm thankful for the opportunity to be able to play in front of home and represent Wisconsin, and not only for what we did on the court, but really what I'm going to take away is what we did off the court. And I felt that we really impacted lives and tried to make our state, my state, my home state, a better place. And I think we were able to do that.
Well, I would agree with you on that, Wes. I thought, you know, what you guys did in the bubble was unbelievably and powerful. And I think it's something all of us who watched it and covered it will remember for a long time, you know, just because of the purity of why you did it. And I think it's going to be a seminal moment,
you
know?
It means a lot.
True, it's true. You know, I was looking up just kind of your stats against the Lakers over the years. You've probably spent a lot of your career guarding LeBron James every time your team played him, right?
Oh yeah, very familiar.
So how does it feel to know that you don't have to guard him anymore? You can actually pass it to him.
Yeah, right. It's a great feeling knowing that guy's on my team, but. There's no question, but I mean, just everybody, the whole roster that Rob was able to put together, and already a great roster, and to be, you know, added to it and to be coveted, it's an amazing feeling. And yeah, I don't mind not having to guard LeBron, at least outside of practice.
We're talking to Wes Matthews, one of the new Lakers. Wes, you have started almost everywhere you've been. As a matter of fact, I thought this was a weird statistic. every playoff game you've ever been in, and you've been in them with four different teams, you've started. Does it matter to you if you start here, or is this Laker roster, like you were talking about, so deep that they're going to have to find minutes for everybody every way? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to have to find minutes for everywhere. I mean, that's the way that this – I mean, if you look at the Lakers' run last year, I mean,
right.
You know, JaVale was such a huge part in it, and I don't remember what series it was. You know, Dwight Howard came off the bench, you know, and Rondo wasn't around much, and then Rondo was, you know, plugged into essentially a starting role. I mean, you got Caruso who was thrown in playing high volume, high quality minutes. So it took everybody. You know, it takes everybody. Do I view myself as a starter? Yeah, I mean, who doesn't view themselves as a starter? I don't know. But that's not a make or break thing for me. You know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to compete every moment, every single chance I get. I'm going to be in the gym before practice, after practice, off days, and wherever they see to whether that's start, come off the bench, you know, it doesn't matter to me. I'm going to do what I need to do to be the best version of me for this team.
Wes, what was your when you had the Laker jersey ready to go? I noticed that like on Instagram, that was like ready to take a snapshot and go. You what like it was LeBron all over you? Was the AD like who was it a team recruiting? You, I remember you talking you just saying like they made you feel wanted and they saw a spot for you.
Honestly, a lot of we went about it, you know, the right way. It was hard,
yeah.
You know, being patient and
yeah. The
unknown, but so it was just easy for me to I just stayed down. You know, I left it up to God. You know, a big person, a part of it was Jared Dudley. You know,
really?
he was keen in on a lot of, you know, just kind of someone I could bounce ideas off of, thoughts off of. And, but yeah, a lot of it was just viewing from the outside. This is going to be my 12th year. You know, you kind of get a lay of the land. You kind of get a landscape of how things work. You know, I got a great agent with Jeff Austin, great team with Octagon and Kate Foley. Like, hey, we were prepared for whatever situation. And I think it's part of the player's responsibility is to navigate and see where they can fit and how they can help. And then once free agency hit, it was just a formality of which teams we're going to call.
Well, Wes, it is you know, the one thing I wanted to get in here, I didn't know this. I got to Los Angeles the same year Kobe did, and I have just a library full of Kobe Bryant stories. But I didn't know the one about you. If you don't mind, tell that story that when you tore your Achilles, Kobe reached out to you?
Yeah. So he reached out to me the game happened. We were playing on TNT. I was mic'd up that game too.
Wow.
Playing on TNT. We're playing against Dallas. The free agency year. So I'm having a career year, free agency year. We're one of the top three teams in the league at the point, I think. You know, I think it's Golden State, us, and LeBron was in Miami or Cleveland.
Maybe, yeah. Might just come back to
one
Cleveland.
Of those.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which one of those, but so I tore it. All these emotions going through my mind, you know, wondering about free agency, wondering just about, am I going to be able to come back? How long is this going to take? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm driving and I pull up to my house and I'm just in front of the garage and a call comes through and I don't even know the number. I answer it and it's him. And I was like, how the hell did he get my number? So I'm like, this guy. I mean, you guys all know Kobe. He keeps it 100. He keeps it 100 with you. And that's what he did for me in that time. And he told me to get all the emotions out, feel all the emotions, you know, feel the anger, feel the hurt, feel the disappointment, cry, feel the rage. But at the same time, you know that you got work to do. And he told me it was going to be hard. He told me it was going to be difficult, and I said, you know, that's what I needed to hear. You know, everybody's going to say, oh, you're going to be all right. You're going to be bounce back better than ever, stronger, better than ever, right? That's what we all want. But what you really want is to know what it is that you're about to go through. And having gone through or having knowing that he went through it And him giving me advice about it, it gave me the confidence that I was going to knock the rehab out the park and come back like nothing happened.
I love that story, and it sounds like very reminiscent of
what,
of what Kobe used to do, like lay it out straight. Wes, can't tell you how excited we are to have you here, man. I think you're going to be a perfect fit in Los Angeles. I love the story that it's kind of full circle for you and your family, and we can't wait to see you doing your thing. Thanks for coming on today.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, there's Wes Matthews, the new Laker, and he's going to play a lot.
Oh, I think he's going to start. I think he's going to take that Danny Green spot in the lineup.
Right, and if you study his career, if you leave him open at the three-point line, he is a 38% career three-point shooter. Mm. And that's exactly what the Lakers need. And like you said, Ramona, they got him on a very favorable deal. All right, still to come this hour, Lindsay Theory will talk about that big Rams win last night in Tampa. Mason in Ireland. Ramona's in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN. Last night in Tampa, the Rams got it done. They went into Tom Brady's house, intercepted him twice, and beat the Buccaneers. The Rams are now 7-3. And last week, when Lindsay Theory was on, Ramona, I asked her if I was guilty of hyperbole by calling the Rams a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And Lindsay said, I need to wait and see. I need to see a little bit more. Lindsay, did you see what you needed to see? Are you now on my raft that the Rams are a legitimate Super Bowl contender?
I'm fully on. I wrote it last night after the game. I think they are a legit contender to win the NFC, which makes them obviously a legit contender to go to the Super Bowl.
There you go.
We're on. It's on, Ireland. We're full steam ahead with the Rams.
That's not full steam, Lens. That is, you just basically said, I'm slowly climbing onto the boat, but like if they have a bad game or two down the stretch, I'll reserve the right to like jump to the other side
of
the river.
That's totally what you just did.
That's totally what you just did. And then at the end, you were like, full steam.
Oh, Momo.
Come on now.
I like that. Look, here's the thing. I don't know that they're the absolute best team in the NFC. Like 2018, there was no doubt, right? But they are absolutely right up there with the Saints. They are up there. The Packers obviously just lost this last week. But they are one of the best teams in the NFC. But they need to have a complete game like we saw against the Bucks in order to stay there. And I think what caused me a little bit of hesitation is that we know that Kyle Shanahan is had the number for the Rams last three times the Niners faced them. We saw what Miami did earlier this season, so there's a little hesitation, but I'm quite confident about the ability and the potential of this team.
We're talking to Lindsay Theory. She covers the Rams for ESPN. Lindsay, I had an interesting social media experience last night. So I'm watching the game. It's tied at 24. The Rams are driving down the field to try and win the game. It's 3rd and 8. On around the 20-yard line, around the Tampa 20-yard line, and Sean McVay calls an off-tackle run. Jared Goff had been carving the Bucs up the entire game through the air. Cooper Kupp had 11 catches. Robert Woods had 12 catches. 3rd and 8 with the game on the line. He calls a run. Tampa stuffs it, and I tweeted, I can't believe McVay called that play, giving Tom Brady 2.5 minutes with his timeouts to now win the game. But as it turns out, the defense saved him and it didn't matter. Were you surprised that McVay ran the ball 3rd and 8 with the game on the line?
Yeah, I was, especially because they were getting no yards in the run game. But then again, I think it also speaks to the confidence. I know this is going to sound a little wild. The confidence that he has in his defense. There could have easily been some concern. I mean, Jared's had a little bit of ball security issues. There could have been a concern there. There could have been a concern, you know, that maybe he would have been picked off. So kind of did the conservative thing. I know there was a lot of blowback on social media. And I think the least surprising thing, Ireland, is that you're saying, I was surprised with the reaction on social media. No, social media is always an insane place.
Well, you know, Lindsay, what I was going to say, and Ramona, after I tweeted that, I said, well, maybe McVay thinks his defense is no way going to let them go 80 yards down the field. And it turns out they didn't. they came up with a game-winning interception. I said, so I guess McVay was right. And Lindsay, they still came back at me. No, he wasn't right. That was a terrible call. I can't believe he did it. No, he's 32-0 when he has the lead at halftime. So he's doing something right in these games in the second half, isn't he?
Yeah, he definitely is. I mean, look, I was sweating that one out. I mean, I had my whole story ran, and it was as though the Rams were winning. And I just looked at that and went, oh, my God, what are you doing? Because I thought I was going to have to delete the whole thing. And there's nothing more painful than that on deadline. Yeah. But clearly, Sean McVay, like you said, he's 32-0, which is something he wants us to stop talking about because he thinks we're totally jinxing him. But he's 32-0 when he has a halftime lead. He's clearly doing something right. And again, I mean, this defense is why they are 7-3 right now. So he has a lot of trust in Aaron Donald, a lot of trust in Jalen Ramsey, and obviously all these guys around them who are now making big-time names for themselves.
Well, I thought what was interesting about the play call is it reminded me of, like, you know, McVay sort of outsmarting himself at the Super Bowl, right? Or at least Bill Belichick knowing that he would try to outsmart himself and try too hard, and then Bill Belichick unraveling that, right? It just felt like, okay, we're going to run here because everyone thinks we should pass here, and we're not going to pass, and we're going to catch him by surprise. But it also is what Lindsay's saying, which is maybe then Jared won't turn the ball over. Like, it was just a little too much. But I think what this Rams team has done so far is, like, I think they have that perfect mix of, like, they're not playing as the favorite. They're playing as the underdog in most of these games. They've got a chip on their shoulder. They're trying to prove something. And you kind of feel that. Like, I don't think they're walking around like when they went the year they went to the Super Bowl. I mean, they were just blowing people out. Todd Gurley was, you know, everybody's fantasy champ every night, right? Jared Goff, everybody's, you know, 350-yard passer every night. This is different. This is like you're having to prove it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, nobody was talking about the Rams going into this season. I'll be the first to admit, I thought they were going to have kind of an 8-8 type of year.
I did too.
They had three new coordinators, first-time defensive coordinator. You know, their defense, of course, they have Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, but really, for the most part, when you look around them, you're like, well, who's this guy? Who's this guy? I've never seen this guy play. You know, the offense, again, Todd Gurley had a slow 2019, but this offense always operated through Todd Gurley. So there were so many questions going into the season, and so nobody was talking about the Rams like they were favorites, and now suddenly here they are. And I think it's a good position for them. You know, 2018 taught them a lot, obviously, but this is kind of a different way to approach the stretch, kind of being the guys who really just kind of coming from behind with no expectations on them, and they're playing pretty free because of it.
Lindsay Theory is with us. Lindsay, you mentioned Jalen Ramsey. I didn't think, but you watch a lot more football than I do, I didn't think either one of those pass interference calls on Jalen Ramsey were pass interference. Am I just being a homer? Were those real? Did you agree with those calls?
No, I didn't. Actually, I didn't agree with any of the three calls. I mean, even that Jordan Fuller one, yeah, I get it. Jordan Fuller ran into the receiver. But really what he did was he made an excellent break on the ball and happened to collide with the receiver when he easily, if he had taken a step, maybe 6 inches to one side or in front of that receiver, he probably would have had another interception. So I thought those, especially the calls against Jalen Ramsey, were pretty ticky-tack. I mean, him and Mike Evans was a really physical, really good matchup.
Right.
You know, but again, like that second one especially seemed like a pretty egregious call.
Lynn, are they going to win like this every week? Is this the, you know, this idea that Jared Goff is going to be 51 passes and the running game amounts to, like, what was it, John, 40-something yards the whole time?
37, I think.
37. I mean, can they win like that? Can they win with that kind
no.
of balance?
No, that's not sustainable. But again, the Bucs, who had the number two rated run defense going into last night, I mean, I don't think it was a big shock that they were able to stop the Rams' run game. I, the Rams, I think, did try and get outside the tackles where the Bucs have been a little more susceptible, but then they shut that down too. So throwing the ball 50 or 60 times a game, not a way to win. That's just not conducive for the long run. But the good thing is for the Rams, they have proven they can run the football. They've done it effectively. Of course, it didn't happen last night, but it has happened plenty of times this season. It's just going to be a matter of going back to it. And that's really going to start this weekend against the 49ers.
All right, so Lindsay, everybody at the station, every year we get into this survivor pool. It starts with a couple hundred people, and you just got to pick one winner every week. And it's down to four people.
Wow.
And two of the four are Lindsey Fulton and me. We're both still alive. Lindsey and I are both still alive. The only rule is you can't take the same team twice. I've never taken the Rams, but I'm going to take them this week to beat the Niners. Am I making a huge mistake taking the Rams against a team that, as you pointed out earlier, kind of has their number?
No, because Sean McVay was very notable to me last night. Sean McVay, as amped up as he was about that win, was like, and we only have 6 hours to celebrate it because we've got to start planning for the Niners. And so as long as Sean McVay doesn't overthink himself and he doesn't have enough time this week to quite do that, I think that the Rams will get the Niners. I mean, Sean McVay obviously is competitive as anybody, and he knows darn well that he has been beat by Kyle Shanahan pretty soundly the last three times that they have played. So I say the Rams have the edge. McVay is extra motivated. Plus, I mean, I was looking at the Niners roster today, and the amount of guys who are out because of COVID and are on the injured reserve is just staggering. So if ever there was a time for the Rams to break that streak, it's going to be on Sunday.
Hey, last thing, Lindsey, is this guy Matt Gay going to be the kicker now? He missed a field goal last night, but he made a couple. What are you hearing about the kicker?
Yeah, Sean McVay said, the miss, it was a little bit shaky, but it wasn't just like a complete, you know, whiff the ball kind of thing, which is something we have seen this season. So it sounds like a, you know, Matt Gay had the endorsement coming in of Johnny Hecker and Jake McQuaid, so that's really big. So I think they're probably going to ride with him for a while and see what he can do. Of course, if things go south, they might have to reassess, but I think they liked that he actually kicked the ball out of the end zone on his kickoff, had some good trajectory there. So I think you can probably depend on him going forward until you can, right? The life of a kicker.
Right. Well, this guy doesn't look like a kicker, at least not on TV, Lindsey. He's really built, right?
You'll love this. So when Sean McVay came to his post-game news conference last night, he goes, man, Matt Gay, that guy's jacked. He's on like the Aaron Donald workout plan. And then when he walked off the podium, Matt Gay was coming on the podium, and you could hear McVay still getting picked up on the microphone saying, hey, man, you're, you know, blankety jacked for a kicker. And it was hilarious.
Oh, good, good. All right, Lindsey, well, listen, most of all, have a very happy Thanksgiving, and hopefully we'll talk to you next week when hopefully we'll be talking about a Rams win over the Niners. But have a great Turkey Day.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. Happy Thanksgiving.
All right. There is Lindsey Theory. Yeah, the kicker, Ramona, is oftentimes not the most cut guy on the team. But for the Rams, they have Aaron Donald, so that job's already taken. But Matt Gay might be in the conversation. All right, coming up next is the scoop. Go ahead.
Respect.
Yeah, I know. So we'll get to some of the things we haven't talked about yet today coming up next. Ramona in for Mace. I'm John Ireland. Mason in Ireland, ESPN LA.